This is Audible.
This is King of Sloth, Kings of Sin, Book 4, written by Anna Huang, narrated by Elena Wolf and Gregory Salinas. To every woman who's ever been told to smile more. Fuck that. Do what you want. Chapter 1. Sloan. Breaking into a $10,000-a-night Greek villa hadn't been in my plans for the day. But plans changed and people adapted, especially when they had clients who insisted on making their life as difficult as possible. My knees scraped against concrete as I hauled myself onto the terrace ledge and over the railing. If I ruined my brand new Stella Alonso dress over this, I'd kill him, bring him back to clean up the mess, then kill him again. Luckily for him, I landed on the terrace without incident and easily slipped back into the heels I'd tossed over earlier. The heavy drum of my heartbeats followed me to the sliding glass door, where I tapped the master key I'd borrowed from one of the maids against the card reader. I would have gone through the front door, but it was too exposed. The back terrace was the only way. The card reader whirred, and for a single terrifying second, I thought it wouldn't open. Then the reader flashed green, and I allowed myself a breath of relief before I set my jaw again. Breaking in was the easy part. Getting him to another country by sunset was another. I made a quick detour to the kitchen, then crossed the living room to the primary suite. I winced when I saw the empty beer bottles littering the kitchen counter, and it took every ounce of willpower not to toss them in the recycling bin, sterilize the marble, and spray the room with air freshener. Stay focused. My professional and personal reputations were on the line. The villa was cool and quiet, despite the early afternoon sun splashing through the windows, and the bedroom was cooler and quieter still. Perhaps that was why, when I walked to the bed and unceremoniously dumped a large bowl of ice-cold water over its slumbering occupant, the speed of his response startled a rare gasp out of me. A strong hand shot out and grasped my wrist. The empty bowl clattered to the ground, and the room tilted as he yanked me down, rolled over, and pinned me against the bed before the gasp fully left my mouth. Javier Castillo stared down at me, his handsome face etched with a scowl. The only son of Colombia's wealthiest man and my least cooperative client was usually laid back to a fault, but there was nothing laid back about the way his forearm pressed against my throat, or the 180 pounds of solid muscle trapping me beneath him. His scowl relaxed as anger gave way to recognition and a touch of horror.
Sloan?
That is my name. I lifted my chin, trying not to focus on how warm he was compared to the damp mattress against my back. Now, if you could release me immediately, it would be appreciated. I'm ruining a $700 dress.
Mierda.
He spit out the curse and relaxed his hold on my neck so I could get up.
What the hell are you doing here?
My job. I pushed him off me and stood. Was it just me? Or was it exponentially colder now than it had been 5 minutes ago? It's the 12th. You know where you're supposed to be, and it's not here. I glared at him, daring him to argue.
I thought you were an intruder. I could have hurt you.
Now that we'd established I wasn't here to rob or kidnap him, a familiar grin replaced his frown. Javier retook his spot on the bed, the picture of insouciance.
Technically, you are an intruder, but a very beautiful one. If you wanted to join me in bed, you only had to say so. No need to go to all this trouble.
He arched an eyebrow at the bowl on the floor.
How'd you get in, anyway?
I stole a master key, and don't try to distract me. After 3 years of working with Javier, I was used to his tricks. It's 1 in the afternoon. Your jet is waiting for us at the airport. If we leave in the next half hour, we'll make it to London in time to get ready before tonight's gala.
Great plan.
Javier stretched his arms over his head and yawned.
Except for one problem. I'm not going.
My nails dug into my palms before I caught myself. Breathe. Remember, murdering a client is considered unprofessional. You will get out of bed, I said, my voice chilly enough to freeze the droplets of water lingering on his skin. You will board that jet, attend the gala with a smile, and stay for the entirety of the event like a good representative of the Castillo family, because if you don't, I will make it my personal mission to ensure you never have another second of peace. I will crash every party you attend, warn off any woman stupid enough to fall into your orbit, and blacklist any of your friends who enable your worst impulses from my events. I can make your life a living hell, so don't make an enemy out of me. Javier yawned again. This had been our dynamic since Javier's father hired me 3 years ago, right before Javier moved from Los Angeles to New York, but I was done going easy on him.
So, you're my new publicist.
Javier kicked back in his chair and propped his feet on my desk. White teeth flashed against tanned skin, and his eyes sparkled with a slyness that made me bristle. 10 seconds after meeting my most lucrative client, and I already hated him. Remove your feet from my desk and sit like a proper adult. I didn't care that Alberto Castillo was paying me triple my usual fee to look after his son. No one disrespected me in my own office. Otherwise, you can leave and explain to your father why you got dropped by your publicist on the very first day. I imagine that'll have a negative impact on your cash flow.
You're one of those.
He acquiesced, but his smile hardened at the mention of his father.
Uptight rule follower. Got it. You should have introduced yourself that way instead of with your name.
My favorite pen cracked from the force of my grip. I wasn't a superstitious person, but even I could tell that didn't bode well for the future of our relationship. I'd been right. I let him slide when it came to certain things because the Castillos were my biggest contract. But my job was to keep his family's reputation pristine, not kiss the heir's ass. Javier was a grown man. It was time he acted like it.
That's quite a threat,
he drawled.
Every party and woman, you must really like me.
He slunk out of bed with the lazy grace of a panther awakening from slumber. A pair of gray sweatpants rode low on his hips, revealing golden brown skin and a V-cut one wouldn't expect from someone who spent the majority of his days partying and sleeping. Inky tattoos swirled up his bare chest and shoulders, and down his arms in intricate patterns. If it were anyone else, I would have admired the raw masculine beauty on display. But this was Javier Castillo. The day I admired anything except his commitment to non-commitment was the day I could somehow physically cry again.
Don't worry, Luna,
he said, catching my scrutiny with a small grin.
I won't tell your other clients I'm your favorite.
Sometimes he called me by my actual name. Other times he called me Luna. It wasn't my nickname, middle name, or any name close to Sloane, but he refused to tell me why, and I'd given up on getting him to stop or explain long ago. Be serious for once, I said. The event is honoring your father.
Even more reason not to go. It's not like my old man will be there to accept the award.
Javier's smile didn't budge, but his eyes flickered with a spark of danger.
He's dying, remember?
The words crashed between us and sucked all the oxygen out of the room as we stared at each other, his unflappable calm a rock against my mounting frustration. The Castillo's father-son relationship was notoriously thorny, but Alberto Castillo hired me to manage their reputation, not their personal issues. That was, until what happened behind closed doors spilled into the public eye. People already think you're a good-for-nothing trust fund brat for shirking your responsibilities after your father was diagnosed. I didn't mince words. If you miss an event honoring him as Philanthropist of the Year, the media will eat you alive.
They already do, and honor?
Javier raised his eyebrows.
The man writes a check for a couple million every year, and he not only gets a tax write-off, but also fawning praise for being a philanthropist. You and I both know the award doesn't mean shit. Anyone with deep enough pockets can get it. Besides...
He leaned against the wall and crossed his arms.
Mykonos is way more fun than another stuffy gala. You should stay. The ocean air will be good for you.
Damn it. I recognized that tone. It was his "you can put a gun to my head and I still won't cave because it'll piss you off" tone. I'd heard it more times than I cared to count. I did a quick mental calculation. I hadn't gotten to where I was in my career by fighting losing battles. I needed to be in London tonight, and our window for a timely departure was rapidly shrinking. Missing my rendezvous was not an option, but if Javier stayed in Greece, my job required me to stay as well and look after him. Since I didn't have the time to guilt, threaten, or persuade him into doing what I wanted like I usually did, I was left with one last resort, a bargain. I crossed my arms, mirroring his stance. "Let's hear it." His brows arched higher. "Your condition," I said. "The one thing you want in exchange for attending the awards ceremony. Anything involving sex, drugs, or illegal activities is off the table. Other than that, I'm willing to bargain." His eyes narrowed. He hadn't expected me to give in so easily. And if I didn't need to be in London by 8 p.m., I wouldn't have. But I couldn't miss my date, so a deal with the devil it was.
"Fine."
Javier's cheeks dimpled with his signature smile, though a shadow of suspicion remained on his face.
"Since you're so forthcoming, I will be too. I want a vacation."
"You're already on vacation."
"Not me. You."
He pushed off the wall, his steps languid yet deliberate as he crossed the room and stopped mere inches from me.
"I'll attend the gala if you promise to join me on vacation after. 3 weeks in Spain. No work, just play."
The request soared from so far out of left field, I gave myself whiplash trying to follow it. "You want me to take 3 weeks off work?"
"Yes."
"You're out of your mind." I'd taken a total of 2 vacation days since I started Kensington PR, my boutique public relations firm, 6 years ago. The first was for my grandmother's funeral. The second was when I was hospitalized with pneumonia. Chasing paparazzi in the dead of winter will do that to you. Even then, I'd kept up with emails on my phone. I was work. Work was me. The thought of abandoning it for even a minute made my stomach cramp.
"That's the deal."
Javier shrugged.
"Take it or leave it."
"Forget it. It's not happening."
"Fine."
He turned toward the bed again.
"In that case, I'm going back to sleep. Feel free to stay or fly home. It doesn't matter to me."
My teeth clenched. That bastard. He knew I wouldn't fly home and leave him here to sow chaos in my absence. With my luck, he'd throw a public orgy on the beach tonight just to set tongues wagging and drive home the fact he wasn't at the gala when he should be. I glanced at the clock on the wall. We needed to leave in the next 15 minutes if we were to make it to the gala in time. If it weren't for my 8 o'clock date in London, I might have called Javier's bluff, but damn it. "I can do 2 days, I said, relenting. 1 weekend wouldn't kill me, right?
2 weeks.
1 week.
Deal.
His dimples blinded me again, and I realized I'd been tricked. He'd deliberately started with a higher offer to barter me down to his original plan. Unfortunately, it was too late for regrets, and when he held out his hand, I had no choice but to shake on the time frame I'd proposed. That was the worst part about Javier. He was smart, but he applied it to all the wrong things.
"Don't look at me like I killed your pet fish,"
he drawled.
"I'm taking you on vacation. It'll be fun. Trust me."
His smile widened at my icy stare. 1 week in Spain with one of my least favorite people on the planet. What could possibly go wrong?
Chapter 2. Javier. Nothing brightened my day more than riling Sloane up. She was so predictable in her responses and so spectacular in her anger. And I loved seeing her ice queen facade melt long enough to reveal a glimpse of the real person underneath. It didn't happen often, but when it did, I added it to the mental drawer where I collected all things Sloane. Ah, you're one of those. I flicked a gaze over my new publicist's tight bun and tailored dress. Uptight rule follower. Got it. You should have introduced yourself that way instead of with your name. The glare she bestowed on me could have leveled an entire city block. Objectively, Sloane was one of the most beautiful women I've ever met. Blue eyes, long legs, symmetrical face. Michelangelo himself couldn't have sculpted a better female form. Too bad none of that came with a sense of humor. She said something sharp in response, but I'd already tuned her out. Fuck my father for forcing me into this stupid arrangement. If it weren't for my inheritance, I'd tell him to piss off. Publicists were glorified babysitters, and I didn't want or need a babysitter. Besides, as pleasing to the eye as she was, I could already tell Sloane was going to be a major buzzkill. That had been our first meeting. My initial animosity toward her had run out of oxygen since then, leaving... hell, I didn't know. Curiosity? Attraction? Frustration? Much more complicated emotions than hostility, unfortunately. I didn't know when the switch flipped, but I wished I could go back and unflip it. I'd much rather hate her than be intrigued by her.
Stand up straight,
Sloane said without taking her eyes off the man beelining toward us.
You're at a black tie event, not the beach. Try to pretend you want to be here.
There's alcohol, food, and a gorgeous woman by my side. Of course I want to be here. I drawled, telling the truth in the first part and lying my ass off in the second. My gaze skimmed over her quickly enough to escape her notice, yet long enough to imprint the image in my mind. On anyone else, her simple black gown would have been boring. But Sloane could wear a grocery bag and still blow everyone else out of the water. The silk skimmed her lean frame, highlighting her flawless skin and smooth, bare shoulders. She'd swept her hair into a fancier version of its usual bun, and other than a pair of small diamond drop earrings, she wore no accessories and barely any makeup. She'd obviously dressed with the intention of blending in, but she could no more blend into a crowd than a jewel could blend into mud. I'll be honest, I hadn't expected her to accept my deal earlier. I'd hoped she would, but she was married to her job and the gala wasn't that important. It was a run-of-the-mill event honoring my father, not the legacy ball or a royal wedding. The fact she would give up a week of precious work time in exchange for my attendance here, it reeked of fishiness. But I wasn't going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'd been dying to get Sloane away from the office for a while. She was wound so tight she was bound to explode, and I didn't want to be there when it happened. She needed a release. Plus, the trip was the perfect opportunity to corrupt her, get her to let her hair down, literally and figuratively. Loosen up, have some fun. I would pay to see her lounging on the beach like a normal person instead of making people cry on the phone. Sloane Kensington needed a vacation more than anyone else I knew, and I needed. Javier! Eduardo finally reached us. My father's best friend and interim CEO of the Castillo Group clapped a hand on my shoulder, interrupting my thoughts before they strayed down a dangerous path. I didn't expect to see you here, mijo. Me neither, I said dryly. Good to see you, tío. He wasn't my biological uncle, but he might as well have been. Him and my father had been friends since childhood, and he'd been one of his most trusted advisors before my father fell ill. Eduardo was currently running the ship until the board made a final decision on whether to wait for my father to get better or find a new permanent CEO. Eduardo turned to Sloane and gave her a customary Colombian cheek kiss. Sloane, you look lovely, he said. I assume I have you to thank for this one showing up. I know how hard it is to wrangle him, eh? When he was a kid, we called him Pequeño Toro. Stubborn as a little bull. Her earlier ire melted into a professional smile.
It's my job. I'm happy to do it.
She was as good a liar as I was. The three of us chatted for a bit until another guest pulled Eduardo away. He was accepting the Philanthropist of the Year award on behalf of my father, since I'd refused to do it. But everyone seemed eager to talk business instead of charity with him. Typical. I caught Sloane checking her watch again as we wound our way toward our table. That's the dozenth time you've looked at your watch since we've arrived, I said. If you're that eager to leave, we can skip the boring ceremony and get hammered at the bar.
I don't get hammered. And if you must know, I'm meeting someone in an hour. I trust you can behave yourself after I leave.
Despite her cool tone, visible tension lined her jaw and shoulders. Meeting someone this late in London? We settled in our seats just as the MC took the stage and applause filled the room. Don't tell me you have a hot date.
Whether I do or don't is none of your business.
She picked up the calligraphed menu card and scanned it for walnuts, no doubt. Sloane had a strange vendetta against them, and it wasn't an allergy, I checked. I'm surprised you find time to date. The MC began his welcome speech. Reason told me to drop the issue, but I couldn't. There was something about Sloane that always made Reason fly out the window. Who's the lucky guy?
Javier.
She dropped the menu and looked at me.
Now's not the time. We don't want a repeat of the can fiasco.
I rolled my eyes. Get caught dozing off once during a major award speech, and I was suddenly the bad guy. If these types of events weren't so damn boring, maybe I'd have an easier time staying awake. People didn't know entertainment these days. Who wanted stuffy elevator music and the same boring drinks they served at every gala? No one. If I cared enough, I'd give the organizers a few pointers. But I didn't. The servers brought out the food, which I ignored in favor of more champagne as the ceremony trudged on. I tuned it out and ruminated on what type of guy Sloane might be seeing. In all our years working together, I'd never seen her with or heard her mention a date. But obviously she had to have been with someone. She was prickly as hell, but she was also beautiful, smart, and accomplished. Even now there were multiple men sneaking peeks at her from surrounding tables. I downed my drink and glared at one of them until he looked away, his face red. Sloane was my date in name only, but it was bad form for other people to ogle her when she'd come with me. Did no one observe proper etiquette anymore? The room erupted into its loudest round of applause. Eduardo stood, and I realized the MC had just announced my father as the organization's philanthropist of the year.
Clap,
Sloane said without looking at me. A tight smile affixed her face.
The cameras are watching.
When aren't they watching? I clapped half-heartedly for Eduardo, and Eduardo only. It's my honor to accept this award on Alberto's behalf tonight, he said. As you know, he's been my friend and business partner for more years than I can count. Sloane glanced at her watch and gathered her belongings when Eduardo wrapped up his thankfully short speech. I straightened. You're leaving already? It had only been 50 minutes, not an hour.
In case there's traffic. I trust you'll behave in my absence.
She emphasized her last sentence with a warning stare. The minute you leave, I'm throwing my drink in another guest's face and hijacking the music system, I said. Sure you don't want to stay? She didn't look amused.
Do that, and our deal is off,
she said flatly.
I'll check in at the end of the night.
She slipped discreetly out of her chair and toward the exit. I was so focused on watching her leave, I didn't notice Eduardo's approach until he placed a hand on my shoulder. Do you have time to talk? There's something we need to discuss. Sure. With Sloane gone, I'd do anything to get out of sitting here with the most boring table mates in existence. I followed Eduardo into the hall. Now that the ceremony was over, the guests had resumed their drinking and mingling, and no one paid us much mind. I was going to call and tell you, but in person is better. Free from the watchful eyes of photographers, Eduardo's mouth settled into a grim line that had my pulse quickening. Javier, let me guess, it's my father. No, yes, well. Eduardo wiped a hand over his face, uncharacteristically hesitant. His condition is stable. There's been no change. A twist of either relief or disappointment loosened the knot in my chest. How fucked up was it that I had mixed feelings over what should have been good news? That means he's not getting worse. But he's also not getting better, Eduardo said. You haven't visited him in months. You should see him. It might help. The doctors say having loved ones around... The key phrase is loved ones. Since my mom isn't around, I guess he's fucked. The only person my father had ever truly cared about was my mother. He's your father. My honorary uncle's mouth thinned.
Deja de ser tan terco. Haz las paces antes de que sea demasiado tarde.
Stop being so stubborn. Make amends before it's too late. I'm not the one who needs to make amends, I said. There were only so many times a guy could try before he gave up, and I'd reached my limit years ago. Anyway, good talk, but I have somewhere else to be. Javi, safe travels home. I turned. Say hi to everyone else for me.
It's your family's company, Eduardo called after me.
He sounded resigned. He'd only taken the interim CEO position because I'd turned it down, and I knew he clung to the hope that I'd magically come to my senses about continuing the family legacy one day.
You can't run from it forever.
I didn't break my stride. With the ceremony done, the gala was basically over, which meant I wouldn't be breaking my deal with Sloane if I left. The reminder of her and where she was right now, probably on some date with some asshole, darkened my already thunderous mood. I usually tried to look on the bright side, but fuck it, sometimes a guy had to wallow. I grabbed my jacket from coat check and climbed into one of the black cabs waiting outside the event space. Neon, I said, naming the city's hottest new nightclub. I'll tip you £100 if you can get me there in under 15 minutes. The cab pulled away from the curb. I stared out the window at the passing lights of London, eager for the moment I could drink away any thoughts of Eduardo, my father, and a certain publicist who occupied my waking moments far more than she should.
Chapter 3. Sloane. The red "Don't Walk" sign stared me down. I ignored it and power walked across the street, tuning out the blaring car horn of an oncoming truck. I was already late, and if I didn't take off my shoes soon, my bloodied feet would kill me faster than getting hit by a car. 4-inch stilettos looked great, but they weren't made for 10 blocks of city walking. Unfortunately, London traffic was a shit show, so I ditched my cab after being stuck on the same street for 20 minutes. By the time I reached the hotel, my dress stuck to my body with sweat and I could barely feel my feet. But I made it to the penthouse without incident, unless I counted the other guests' horrified stares. Please don't be asleep. I knocked, my heart in my throat. Please don't be asleep. Please don't be. My breath exhaled in a puff of relief when a familiar round face answered the door. There you are. Rhea ushered me in, her eyes darting toward the entrance like George and Caroline would walk in at any minute. She put her job in jeopardy every time she texted me, but we both took our risks for the same reason. I was afraid you couldn't make it. I got held up by traffic, but I wouldn't miss it for the world. I took off my shoes and sighed. Much better. With Rhea's help, I quickly cleaned my bloody feet before walking into the suite's living room. My heart clenched when I saw her sitting on the floor, watching a kid's cartoon about ballerinas. She always gravitated toward shows about dance or sports. Her back faced me, but she must have had a sixth sense because she turned the instant I entered the room. Sloane! Penny scrambled to her feet and ran toward me. You came! Of course I came. I bent down to hug her. God, she'd grown so much since the last time I saw her. She buried her face in my stomach, and if I could cry, I would have at how tightly she clung to me. Besides Rhea, I was probably her first hug of the day. Her nanny left the room, giving us time alone, and I eventually, reluctantly released her so I could fish her gift out of my bag. Happy birthday, Pen. This is for you. My half-sister's eyes lit up. She took the gift and unwrapped it, taking great care not to rip the silver-striped paper. She was Penelope to her parents and Penny to everyone else, but she'd always be Pen to me. The sister I never knew I needed, the only one who'd cried when I left, and the only Kensington I still considered family after my grandmother died. She finished unwrapping the gift, and her delighted gasp brought a smile to my face.
The new American sports doll!
She clutched the precious item to her chest. How did you get this? I know people. Your older sister is pretty cool, you know, I teased. The limited edition doll was one of the most sought-after toys in the world. There were only 24 in existence, but my friend Vivian's husband pulled some strings and got me one in time for Penn's birthday. She couldn't play with it openly, but one of the upsides to her parents' neglect was that they wouldn't notice or question how she'd gotten the toy. So, how does 9 feel? I sat next to her on the floor. You're almost in the double digits.
Gross. Soon I'll be old like you. Ah!
Penn erupted into hysterical giggles when I tickled her side.
Stop! I'm sorry, she gasped. You're not that old.
That's what you get for insulting me, I quipped. But I stopped tickling her, mindful not to overexert her. I always trod a line between treating her like a normal kid while knowing she wasn't, at least not in terms of physical stamina. 2 years ago, Penn had been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, or CFS, after an unusually lengthy bout of mono. Characterized by extreme fatigue, sleep issues, and joint and muscle pain, among other things, CFS had no cure or approved treatment. It was difficult to determine the cause, though her doctors suspected it was triggered by a change in the way her immune system responded to illness, and the best we could do was manage the symptoms. Despite having no FDA-approved treatments, CFS had spawned 1,001 snake oil salesmen who promised a cure via special vitamins, antiretrovirals, and other miracle medications. Penn's parents had flushed a ton of money down the drain trying to find something that worked. Nothing ever did. So eventually, they gave up and simply shoved her at home where they didn't have to think about her. Luckily, Penn had mild CFS, so she could carry out everyday activities better than those with more severe cases. But she couldn't play sports like she wanted or attend school like her peers. On bad days, it was difficult for her to walk. She was currently homeschooled, and Rhea stayed with her pretty much 24/7 in case she crashed.
I made something for you.
Penn sounded out of breath, but my concern ebbed when she walked to the coffee table and returned without missing a beat. A knot formed in my throat. It was a good day. She deserved a good day on her birthday.
It's a friendship bracelet.
She placed the jewelry carefully in my palm.
I have a matching one. See?
The beaded bracelet simply had 5 hearts. Hers were pink, mine were blue. The pressure from the knot wound its way up behind my nose and ears. It's beautiful. Thank you, Penn. I slid the bracelet onto my wrist. But you should receive gifts on your birthday, not give them. Especially not when making the jewelry probably cost her hours worth of energy.
I don't get to see you on your birthday, she said in a small voice.
I hated that she was right. We only saw each other a few times a year when Rhea could sneak me in. My family was spiteful enough that they'd lock her in a vault before they'd willingly let me visit, and I was proud enough never to apologize for something I wasn't at fault for. I'd thought about it, but I couldn't do it, not even for Penn. Well, we're together now, I said, pushing thoughts of the past aside. What do you want to do? We can watch a movie. Play with your new doll?
I want to watch the Black Castle versus Holchester game.
Penn looked at me with big doe eyes.
Please?
I wasn't a sports person, but she loved soccer, so I acquiesced to a taped replay. The game made headlines earlier this year because it had been the first time Asher Donovan, the darling of the Premier League and the newest transfer to Black Castle, had played against his old team. Besides Javier, Asher was my most difficult client, but he was also Penn's hero. She'd nearly ruptured my eardrum when he signed with my firm a few years ago. Speaking of Javier, while Penn curled against my side and watched the match with rapt attention, I quickly checked my phone for any new gossip items. I ignored a text from an old hookup asking to meet up again. The man could not take a hint, and scanned the news.
I had alerts for all my clients, but there were only two names that made my blood pressure rise whenever they popped up on screen. One of their initials, XC. Nothing. Good. He was behaving. I swore Rhea had an easier time taking care of Penn than I did keeping Javier in line. Penn and I didn't talk throughout the game, but we didn't need to. Even though we didn't see each other often, the best part of our reunions was being comfortable together. Sometimes that meant talking nonstop. Other times it meant watching a movie in content silence. She shifted half an hour in, and when I looked down, my pulse spiked with worry. Pale face, glazed eyes. She was about to crash. "I'm okay," she said when I called for Rhea. The older woman rushed into the room, her face wreathed with concern.
"Stay."
Penn clutched my sleeve with her little hand.
"I never get to see you."
Despite her words, her voice faded into a whisper toward the end. The night had taken its toll, and it was a testament to her fatigue that she didn't argue again when I kissed her goodbye on the forehead. "We'll see each other again soon," I said fiercely. "I promise." I wished we had more time together, but Penn's health came before anything else. Rhea and I took her into the bedroom, where she instantly crashed. I hoped she slept through the night. Otherwise, tomorrow would be rough. I smoothed back her hair, my throat clogged with emotion. Another visit finished too soon. Our time together never lasted as long as I would have liked, but at least I saw her. It was best I could have asked for, given our circumstances.
"It's good she got to see you for a bit tonight," Rhea said after we returned to the living room.
"Mr. and Mrs. Kensington didn't spend a lot of time with her before they went out." Of course they hadn't. My father and stepmother considered Penn's condition an embarrassment and kept her away from the public as much as possible. "Thank you for letting me know about tonight," I said. Rhea had called last week and told me they would be in London. George and Caroline had dinner and show reservations tonight, which gave me a large enough window to see Penn.
"I appreciate—" "Absolutely terrible!"
A familiar voice outside the door stopped us in our tracks and made my stomach plunge.
"Honestly, George, I've never had a more abysmal lobster."
Rhea and I stared at each other, her huge eyes mirroring mine. "They're not supposed to be back for another 2 hours." Her mouth trembled.
"If they see you,
we'd be done for." Rhea loved Penn like a mother. If she were fired, they would both be devastated. And if I couldn't see Penn anymore, do something. CEOs and celebrities paid me exorbitant amounts of money to guide them through rough patches. But a strange disassociation rooted my feet to the floor. It was like I was watching an actor play me in the hotel room while the real me spiraled down a tunnel of unwanted memories. Dating you is like dating a block of ice. I don't know if you even like me. Can you blame him for what he did? If you actually cared that much, you'd cry or show some emotion. Don't embarrass us, Sloan. If you walk out that door, there's no coming back. Pressure pushed against the backs of my eyes, desperate for a way out. As always, it found none. A key word against the suite's card reader.
"Move," a voice inside my head screamed. "Are you stupid? You're going to get caught."
The soft click of the door unlocking finally snapped me out of my trance and into crisis management mode. I didn't think. I simply grabbed my bloodied heels from the entryway, scanned the living room for any traces I might have left behind, and, satisfied there were none, ducked behind the floor-to-ceiling drapes. The door opened, revealing a glimpse of gray hair before I fully ensconced myself behind thick red velvet. My palms curled, slick with sweat. I hadn't planned on running into my family today. I wasn't mentally prepared for that. And though I wasn't a particularly religious person, I prayed with everything I had that they were too tired to do anything except go straight to sleep.
"We should have stuck with our regular spot."
Caroline's clipped tone echoed in rhythm with her heels.
"This is what happens when you give so-called rising stars a chance, George. They're rarely up to par."
"You're right,"
My father's deep, familiar voice rumbled through me like thunder on a Friday night when I was tucked in bed with a book and flashlight. Equal parts comforting and ominous, it chipped at the wall I'd erected long ago until a sliver of nostalgia escaped. It had been years since I heard his voice in person.
"Next time we'll go to the club,"
he said.
"Rhea, order room service for us. We barely ate anything at the restaurant."
"Yes, sir." "And why are the drapes open?" Caroline's voice grew louder. "You know they must be closed immediately at sunset. Lord knows who could be looking in right now."
"No one, because you're on the 12th floor and not facing any other buildings." My snarky mental reply didn't prevent the taste of copper from filling my mouth when my stepmother's footsteps stopped in front of me. I stood frozen, staring at the swath of velvet that was the only thing separating me from disaster.
"Don't look behind the drapes. Don't look behind—"
She grasped the curtains with one hand. I pressed my back against the window, but she was centimeters from my face, and I had nowhere else to go. Thud, thud, thud. The ominous drum of my heartbeat intensified with each passing second. I was already devising multiple plans and backup plans for what I would say, what I would do, and who I would hire to help if Caroline found me and shipped Pen off to some remote location where I couldn't see her. Caroline's hand tightened around the drapes. For a heart-stopping moment, I thought the jig was up. Then she dragged the curtains closed, hiding me completely, and resumed her complaints about that night's dinner.
"Honestly, I don't know how Vogue could have named him one of the best new chefs of the year."
The sound of her heels faded, along with my father's murmured response and the click of a door closing. Neither one asked about Pen or acknowledged Rhea again. My body sagged, light with relief, but when Rhea pulled back the drapes, I didn't waste time loitering. George and Caroline could come back out any minute. I squeezed Rhea's hand in a silent goodbye and escaped out the front door. She smiled, her eyes worried, and I didn't breathe properly until I hit the sidewalk outside the hotel. The shock of unexpectedly being in the same room as my father again disoriented me for a few minutes, but the cool October air poured over me like an ice shower, and by the time I reached the corner, the buzz had vanished from my ears and the streetlights no longer blurred into an orange stream.
"I'm fine. This is fine." I hadn't been caught. I'd spent time with Pen on her birthday, and now I could—
My phone buzzed with a news alert. I glanced at it, my stomach plummeting the minute I saw Perry Wilson's distinctive blog logo. I clicked into the article, and a crimson haze wiped away any lingering unease over my narrow escape from the hotel.
"You've got to be kidding me. 2 hours. I left him alone for 2 hours, and he still couldn't follow simple instructions." I shoved my phone into my bag and hailed a passing cab.
"Neon." I slammed the door shut, causing the driver to wince. "I'll give you your biggest tip of the month if you get me there in 10 minutes.
Every second counted when I had a client to strangle.
Chapter 4. Sloan. The society papers called them the modern jet set. The trashier gossip columns derided them as heirs and spares, the children of the rich who squandered their days drinking and partying instead of doing anything useful with their lives. I simply called them Javier and friends. Derogatory. 8 minutes after I left Penn's hotel, I strong-armed my way into Neon, where Javier and friends had taken over the VIP room. The scene was almost a replica of the photos splashed across Perry Wilson's latest blog post. One of Javier's friends was snorting cocaine off a bottle girl's stomach, another was giving someone a lap dance, and a half-dressed couple was basically having sex in the corner. Lounging amidst the hedonism like a king surveying his court was Javier, one arm tossed over the back of a velvet banquette, while the other held a bottle of tequila. Javier, who was supposed to be at the awards gala happening this very second. Javier, who desperately needed more of an image cleanup than usual after Perry Wilson's hit piece about his birthday party gone wild in Miami a few months ago. Javier, who'd promised me he wouldn't step foot in a nightclub until we fixed said image. I barely felt the pain in my feet as I stalked toward the banquette and stopped directly in front of him, blocking his view of the crowd. The women fluttering around him must have picked up on my intent to kill because they scattered faster than falling leaves on a gusty day. Javier took a long swig of tequila before addressing me.
First Mykonos, now this?
A slow smile spread across his face.
You stalking me, Luna?
If I were, you make it easy. I held up my phone, which displayed a lurid photo of Javier tossing back a shot while a pretty blonde straddled his lap. Castillo Air ditches gala honoring his dying father. No clubs until we fix your image, and you were supposed to stay for the entirety of the gala. That was our deal.
No, our deal was that I stay for the entire ceremony, which I did. The ceremony and the gala are not the same. As for the club thing...
A casual shrug.
Maybe you should have put it in writing.
I grabbed the bottle from his hand. What I really wanted was to grab him and shake him, but I was mindful of the cameras secretly trained on us. People were less discreet than they thought they were. Get up, I said through gritted teeth. We're going back to the hotel. Where I can knock some sense into you in peace.
How was your date?
Javier ignored my order and flicked his gaze over my face, down my dress, and to my feet. Fantastic. I didn't dispel his assumption of why I'd left the gala early. Less fantastic was getting another Perry Wilson notification about you. A strange glow of satisfaction settled in his eyes.
Did it interrupt your evening?
He asked silkily.
My bad.
I kept my expression neutral as I shifted my stance and carefully stepped on his foot with a razor-sharp stiletto. The table hid what I was doing from prying eyes, so from a distance, it looked like nothing was wrong. Javier's cockiness instantly disappeared beneath a grimace. You have 30 seconds to get up, or you'll lose not only a toe, but a much more important part of your anatomy. I cocked my head and tapped a finger against the tequila bottle. Did you know there are online tutorials for everything? Including how to castrate a home invader with common household items. To his credit, he didn't flinch at the word castrate.
Let me guess, you've watched all of them, overachiever.
He slunk deeper in his seat and stared up at me with hooded nonchalance.
Relax, Luna. It's Friday night. Take the stick out of your ass and have a little fun.
A muscle twitched beneath my eye. Do not take the bait. I'm not here to have fun. It came out as a near growl.
Obviously.
Javier gave me another once over.
It's too bad you're wasting a perfectly nice dress on such a boring end to the night. Speaking of which, how did your date feel about you leaving early?
They felt it was in their best interest to do as I say. I stepped harder on his foot, a smile flashing at his renewed grimace. Since I'm having such a boring night, I'm tempted to spice things up. Of course, I can't guarantee my idea of a fun time matches yours, especially when you're surrounded by your friends, and the chances of embarrassment are high. My smile disappeared. Rest assured, I will drag you out of here like you're an insolent child throwing a temper tantrum, and no, I do not care if I'm the one who has to clean up the mess afterward. It would be worth it for the shit you'll get from your friends for the rest of your days. So unless you want that to happen, get the hell up. Javier listened to my tirade without a hint of concern. After I finished, he yawned, stretched his other arm over the back of the banquette, and cast a pointed glance at the heel impaling his $5,000 shoe.
Can't get up unless you let me go, sweetheart.
I didn't take my eyes off him as I released him, suspicious of his sudden obeisance. He unfolded himself from the banquette and stared down at me, a glint of amusement re-entering his eyes. Even when I wore my Jimmy Choo's, he towered over me by a good 3 inches. I hated it.
In my defense, I did fulfill my end of our deal,
he said.
Like I said, the ceremony and gala are two different things. The ceremony ended when Eduardo finished his speech, which also happened to be when you left. So don't try to use it as an excuse to back out of our vacation.
That's semantics.
Maybe.
He drawled.
But it's also the truth.
And what about your promise not to go clubbing until we fixed your image?
My image was fixed. There hadn't been a single bad story about me for weeks.
Javier's eyes gleamed with laughter.
You never specified your definition of a fixed image, Luna. It's not my fault if we have different ideas of what that means.
God, he was insufferable. Even more annoying was the fact he was right, but I would rather throw myself off Big Ben than admit it. Just shut up and follow me, I snapped, wishing I had a wittier reply.
Yes, ma'am.
His cheeks dimpled.
I love a woman in charge.
I ignored the sexual innuendo and turned on my heel. He followed me to the exit without saying goodbye to his friends. I didn't know if he'd tired of arguing with me or if I'd genuinely scared him with the threat of embarrassment. I doubted it. But the reasons for his about-face didn't matter. The only things that mattered were if he listened to me and stayed out of trouble.
What's the story behind the bracelet?
He asked on our way down the elevator. Excuse me?
The bracelet.
Javier tipped his chin toward the friendship bracelet on my wrist.
You weren't wearing that at the gala.
My muscles coiled. Only my best friends knew about my visits to Penn, and there was no way I was adding him to that trusted circle. It was a gift. I didn't elaborate. A shadow of knowing passed over his face. For someone who'd been drinking all night, he was shockingly observant. Luckily, he didn't press the issue, and we walked the remaining distance to the main exit in silence. However, I should have known the peace wouldn't last.
New terms,
he said when we climbed into the back seat of a cab.
You can't be such a buzzkill when we're on vacation.
Then don't take me with you. I answered a work email about a potential new client without looking up. It was still business hours in New York.
Nice try. For someone who's stalking me, you don't seem to like my company much.
He placed a hand on his chest with a mock wounded look.
It hurts my soul, truly.
What would hurt more is getting cut off. Javier was set to inherit billions of dollars if and when his father died. However, his current income came from an extravagant annual allowance that would immediately cease if he violated one of the two terms. One, he must retain me as his publicist, and two, he couldn't do anything that damaged the family reputation. There was a three-strikes policy for the second condition, and somehow, I was in charge of determining whether Javier was in compliance. He'd raise holy hell when he first found out about it, but he'd settled into grudging acceptance since. I didn't abuse my power. However, I was this close to adding a second strike to his record. The first had been his 29th birthday in Miami.
Maybe,
Javier said, sounding unconcerned.
Regardless, you can't do that on vacation.
He nodded at my phone. What, check my emails?
Exactly. A vacation isn't a vacation if you're working the entire time.
I scoffed. If you think I'm spending an entire week without checking my emails, you're more delusional than I thought. I run a business, Javier, and if you want me in Spain, then you'll agree to my terms.
I see.
He cocked an eyebrow.
I never took you for a liar, Sloane. Our trip hasn't even started, and you're already going back on your word.
He might as well have slapped me in the face. Excuse me? I'd been called many things in my life, but I'd never once been called a liar. Sure, I might have bent the truth at times. Which publicist worth their salt didn't? But when it came to promises, I kept mine. Always. That was one of the reasons I'd agreed to this stupid bargain with Javier in the first place. I'd promised Penn I'd see her tonight, and the only way I could have done that was by giving in to his demands.
No work, just play,
he said.
I distinctly remember that being one of the terms when you agreed to them. Checking emails is considered work, which means you'd be reneging on your promise.
Damn it. He was right. Again. I'd somehow blocked out that condition of our deal, if only because it was so absurd. I couldn't ignore my messages for a week, but I couldn't go back on my word either. I propose an amendment, I said tightly. I can check my personal emails at any time, and I can check my work ones if all I do is delegate them to my team. Javier's eyes narrowed. Several beats passed before his face relaxed into a smile again.
Amendment accepted. Now,
The driver cut him off before he could finish his sentence. Apparently, he'd tired of our conversation.
Where to?
He asked pointedly. Javier and I answered at the same time.
Claridge's.
Stansted Airport.
You promised me a vacation,
Javier said when I stared at him.
Time to put your money where your mouth is.
We literally arrived in London hours ago, and we don't leave for Spain until tomorrow. That much travel in one day made me want to die.
Check your watch. It's 5 past midnight.
It was, indeed, 5 past midnight. I just kept taking losses tonight. Note to self, in the future, specify a departure time and not just a departure day. My luggage is at my hotel. I need to get it, I said, trying to stall.
Already taken care of.
He held up his phone.
I just messaged my hotel butler. Our luggage will be waiting for us on the jet when we arrive.
It's too late. I grasped for another excuse to delay the trip. It's dangerous to fly at this time. Javier didn't deign to acknowledge my ridiculous statement. Red-eye flights took off after midnight all the time. The cab driver twisted around to glare at us.
Claridge's or Stansted?
He demanded.
I don't have all night. Stansted. Sorry, my man.
Javier shoved a handful of bills toward the front seat.
Appreciate it.
Mollified, the other man grabbed the cash and sped off. I guess I wasn't the only one who bribed drivers when the occasion called for it.
Relax, Luna.
Javier laughed as we wound through the near-empty streets at a breakneck pace.
You're officially off the clock for the next week. Enjoy it.
I pressed my lips together. All I have to do is get through the week without slipping up. I wasn't sure what slipping up would look like, but foreboding inched beneath my skin the closer we got to the airport. I didn't know what would happen when I didn't have the buffer of work to shield me. But if Javier thought he could trick me into letting down my guard in Spain, he had another thing coming. Vacation or not, I was still me. I didn't let people see past what I wanted them to see, and nothing would change that. Not even a forced week off with my client Nemesis.
Chapter 5. Javier. Sloane and I flew to Mallorca in silence. I could tell she was plotting my demise the entire time, but luckily all sharp objects remained blood-free when we landed. By then we were so tired she didn't argue over sharing a villa with me, and I didn't protest when she took the primary suite. I was simply happy to fall into bed and pass out. Despite my exhaustion, it was a fitful sleep plagued by replays of the same dream. I was crossing a bridge with Hershey, my pet chocolate lab from childhood. But every time I made it halfway, the gaps between the planks widened. No matter how hard I tried to jump the distance or cling to the railing, we fell through the gap. I plunged into quicksand and watched helplessly as the surrounding river swept my beloved dog away. Hershey died years ago from old age, but that didn't matter to dream me. The crushing anchor of failure weighed me down more than the quicksand. The fall happened over and over and over until I woke up, heart pounding and body drenched in sweat. Variations of the dream had haunted me for years. Sometimes I was with Hershey. Other times I was with my mother, an old friend, or an ex-girlfriend. Whoever it was, the result remained the same. I was stuck watching them die. Fuck this. My harsh voice chased some of the ghosts away as I tossed my covers off. It was only 8. I usually didn't get up until past 10. But I couldn't stay in that bed any longer. I turned the shower as cold as it would go and washed away the remnants of the night. It was just a stupid dream. I wasn't going to let it ruin my trip,
and I sure as hell wasn't going to dig deeper into what it meant. Ignorance was bliss. I scrubbed harder with the soap. By the time I towed off and threw on